Can you hear you?
Body Johnny, everyone. This is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University, Long Beach Africana Studies Department. Along with my co-host, who will be joining us shortly, historian Joe Hembrick, longtime coach and educator for Compton and Linwood Unified School District, as well as outstanding historian on the history of African people throughout the diaspora. Secondly, we want to thank Brother Rashiki Maskani, who is provides the platform for the Conscious Corner. And we want to welcome all guests to chime in. We have a very, very outstanding guest this evening. One that is a personal friend, him and his wife and his family. Former NBA, we consider a superstar with the Boston Celtics, drafted in as the 17th player in 1974, I believe it was, and in the first round, and played overseas in the Philippines, as well as an outstanding star, known for really shutting down Raymond Lewis. And I think that was about 1972 or 73 at the Long Beach Sports Arena. Just an outstanding defense player, made the last 8 points for the Boston Celtics in the 1976 championship that led them over Phoenix. And just an outstanding worker at Cal State Long Beach, where he retired from work, and he coached the Sparks, the LA Sparks, assistant coach for the LA Sparks, as long as, if I'm not mistaken, coaching all over, but where he's loved and beloved. I met a guy while I was getting my treatment for dialysis who was a Filipino, and he adored all he could talk about. He didn't think I knew Glenn Donald. That's how much a star he was in the Philippines. So we want to welcome Glenn. He's going to talk to us about his journey from South Central Los Angeles to the NBA and to the Philippines, and the ins and outs that goes with that travel through Cal State Long Beach from Jefferson, who high school, all the way up to, as I said, the NBA, and then the Philippines, as well as coaching the Sparks, as well as just being a beloved individual and respected individual on campus in the pros, and as a family man, and as a respected brother all around. So we hope that you enjoy this session. So Glenn, just tell us a little bit more if you want to add anything, and about your journey from Jeff, where someone convinced you to play, and then how you got to Cal State Long Beach, what it was like to play for Hall of Famer Jerry Tarkanian, mm-hmm. and what it was like. We went to his memorial, and we went to all his services. He's a Hall of Fame coach. So just go ahead on, Glenn, let you take it over from there.
I think I'll just close out. I appreciate it. Thank you for everything. I really appreciate you getting me on the show. Rigo has tried to get me on a couple different times, and he knows that I'm not one that like to get out and speak and things like that too much. But then when you called me, I'm like, oh Lord, Rod, they called me. I can't back off. I can't do that, you know. So, but I appreciate you having me on your show. It's a funny journey to a degree, because I came to California in when was it, 70, right? 65, you know, from a little town in Illinois called Kewanee, Illinois, which was, and I was just looking it up the other day, you know, and it was a small town, and it's still a small town. It's 12,000 people, you know, and I came from there. I was born in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. then, you know, we moved to Illinois where my mother was born. We moved there. And then from there, we came to California. You know, we came to California basically right at the kind of at the end of the Watts riot, you know, which I was devastated basically because, like I said, the little town I came from, you didn't hear about all the, you know, like, you know, the fires and riots and, you know, different things like that. So when my mother had come out to California to visit her sister-in-law, she came back and she said, we were going to move to California. Could be a better opportunity for jobs and things like that. And I'm like, I saw it. I was looking at it on TV. I said, I'm not moving there. All that, all the fighting and fires and no, we're not moving there. So she said, no, you're moving there with me because you're the man of the house. You got my three sisters. So you have to go with me. So, you know, of course we come out to California. And I just kind of got into sports, and my mother really, she loves seeing me play sports. So when I got out here, my punishment to her was not playing sports. I was like, well, I'm not gonna play no sports. We're gonna go out to California. You know, I'm not gonna play any sports. You know, so don't ask me, you know, about playing sports. So we get out here and the first day of school, she walks me down to Carver Junior High School. And I told her that was the wrong school. She said, what do you mean that's the wrong school? I said, this is not a junior high school. She says, this is Carver Junior High. She showed me the sign, Carver Junior High School. And I'm like, there's no way this is a junior high school because everybody was sitting on the outside, outside in front of the school. You had guys that supposedly my age with beards and mustaches. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What am I getting into? What do you bring me out here for? You know, the first day of school, when I do go, this guy approaches me and asks me where I'm from. So I said, I'm from Kewanee. And he said, hey man, ain't none of us in Tijuana. I'm like, Tijuana? Well, I don't know what's Tijuana. He goes, so a brother I just met on my block, he came over and said, hey man, he's new. He just came, he's from this little town of Illinois called Kewanee, Illinois. So I go by, I said, why did he ask where I'm from in the first place? He said, because you wear these high water pants and that's the businessman. I said, what the hell is a businessman? He goes, that's a gang. I got home that night. I said, hey, Mom, we got to get some new clothes. She said, what are you talking about? I said, they think I'm in a gang because I got these short-ass pants on. You know, so that was my first introduction to California, to Los Angeles, you know. And so I ended up, you know, I had a good time at Carver. I met some good people and, you know, then ended up going to Jefferson High School. And Jeff was, it was different. It was basically all black, and I'd never been in a situation like that. The school I went to back in Illinois, you know, it's all white, basically all white. You had like a sprinkle of black people, you know, within other students, but those students, they didn't seem like they were black anyway, you know, because they're like light skinned, you know, and there's just, you know, they just didn't seem.
Bro.
All right, Coach McDonald froze up. Rod, you still there? Yeah, you there?
Yeah, I'm still on the set, and DeAndre and Cinder.
Yeah, well, while Coach is, I guess he is signed back on. I'll call him in a minute if he doesn't come back. It's probably some a Wi-Fi issue, but while we waiting on him, I can tell you a little story that transpired when I was developed. Well, I had the website and I was looking to do, I'm always looking to do more on the website. So what happened was I thought about Coach McDonald interviewing him. And I said, you know, he's, to me, such a real good guy. You know, one of the best couple, he's back. Okay, I'll tell the story later. All right. All right, Coach.
Is this you and me?
No,
that's everybody.
Oh, okay. I'll see. Let me see if I can. Okay, all right. Okay, all right. Well, I don't even know where I was.
Oh, it probably just was a.
He's talking about where he was talking. You were saying that you had just went to Carver and that you had met. You met a lot of good people, and when you went to Jeff, it was all black, but where you was coming from was
Yeah. So it was just a, it was a different situation completely. You know, it was like a, you could say cultural shock, because I'd never been around that many Black people in my whole life. You know, so it was just a whole different situation there. But it was good, because during that time there was the movement going on, and, you know, they wanted us to get involved with the Black Panthers, and you know, and you know, a lot of us, the guys I had met, they wanted to join, basically, you know, to get involved, because they knew that they were out in within the community trying to promote, you know, what we needed to do as far as Black people. But then the majority of the guys I was around, the only reason they wanted to get involved with was because they said, you know, they had pretty, you know, like they had pretty girls. You know, they said, man, we can get in there, man, we can find us some women, you know, da 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 da. And then until they got in it and saw that these sisters weren't about that. You know, they're about the movement. They ain't about hooking up, you know. So that was a good experience for me, especially because, you know, like I said, I got a chance to get involved with some people that you saw that cared about us as people, not just, you know, the athletes and, you know, those type of things. So, but I ended up getting involved with basketball because I'd play on the playground all the time. But I never played in any type of organized sports. And once I got to high school, everybody was asking me if I was going to play because, you know, they could see I knew how to play. And I didn't start playing until I was like 12 years old, just in regards to playing basketball. But I picked it up pretty quickly. And then when I got out to California, I said, let me just play, you know, with friends. But then they told me that wanted to know if I was going to try out for the team or not. And I was like, no, I'm not trying out for the team. And then all of a sudden they go, that's when they had the JV, the varsity JV, the B's and C's and, you know, those type of teams. They told me you probably wouldn't make the C team in the first place. So right there, that was a challenge. And the guy that told me that, I said, well, I'm going to go ahead and go out for the team. And because he was a starter on the, you know, he was a starter on the team. And so I just went in and took his place. You know, so that's what it was about. I was like, okay, you're going to tell me I'm going to play. You're not going to play because I'm going to take your spot, you know. And so it turned out to be just that. And our coach, you know, Larry Hansen was our coach, a white coach, coaching all these Black kids. But he just had a knack. He had a way to deal with, you know, with Black kids. And I guess he had been there for so long, you know, it was just a habit. He knew how to, you know, work with us, knew how, what would keep us going, what would make it where you give up or you don't give up. So I appreciated him as a coach because, you know, he pulled everything out of you. You know, he challenged you day in, day out. He challenged you. And, you know, we had a couple other people, you know, like with Sam Robinson, you know, of course he played there as well, but he was there a few years before me. And I'd met Sam before, and he told me that, you know, this guy is a tough coach, and he's going to make you work hard, and but we were going to be good. And we ended up being extremely good, you know, during that time. I think that one of the big things with me is that coming from Illinois, you know, I had a different mentality in regards to academics. You know, I mean, I was focused on academics, but once I got here, you know, it was just so much going on, so many things going on. And I didn't focus the way I was supposed to, especially when I got into high school. And I started getting recruited. And the thing about that was that one day my coach told me that a lot of these schools are coming after you. They're interested in you, but you're not going to be able to go to none of these schools. You don't get your grades up. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, he said, well, you're not going to be able to, you know, because you're going to have to go to class. And I said, I'm going to college to play basketball. I'm not going to, what are you talking about going to class? Because no one had ever talked, all the different people I knew that went to college from like basketball scholarships, no one ever came back in the summertime talking about classes and all this kind of stuff, right? I did not think you had to go to class. I thought when you got a scholarship to play basketball, you go there, you play basketball. That was it, you know. And so I told him that. I told my coach, I'm going to play basketball. I'm not going to go to no school. And he's like, oh, you need to come in here and sit down. We need to talk. So he finally explained to me everything about, you know, what you need to do, you know, about getting a degree from college, and you have to have a certain amount of GPA to stay eligible to even play in college. And so I've ended up getting real focused so I can make sure I can get into somebody's college. But I honestly, because nobody in my family had ever went to college. And so, you know, I had no clue. I thought that's what you did when you get a scholarship to play basketball. That's what you did. You went to college to play basketball. And then in the summertime, you came home. And then when school started back, you go to college to play basketball. And that was my understanding of the whole thing. And even though we had great counselors there and stuff, no one had really sat me down and talked to me about that, you know, until fortunately I did mention it to them that, you know, I'm not going to play, you know, to go to school. I'm going there for basketball, because otherwise I really would have never, you know, focused on it. And I never would have got to where I ended up getting to, you know. And then Jerry Tarkanian started recruiting me, and, you know, those type of him and Ivan Duncan was the assistant coach. And, you know, so we finally were able to get that taken care of, and I ended up at Long Beach. So it was just kind of ironic that, you know, you don't know what's going on unless someone tells you, you know. And so, like I said, without anybody from my family going to college or anything, no one ever had a clue. They just knew, oh, Glenn might go to college and play basketball, that type of thing. So, but that's the beginning of, you know, what, you know, what ended up happening with me and, you know, being able to go to Long Beach State, get there. And Jerry Tarkanian, you know, was the coach. And I like Jerry, you know, and, you know, he passed recently, and, you know, but I like the way he did with his players. But at the same time, I didn't like the style that we played when he was the coach. You know, because we had so many great athletes, but we had to walk the ball down the court. You know, I mean, I was so jealous when he went to Vegas, they were flying up and down the floor, running gun, you know, but we still were successful, you know, and it was mainly because, you know, we had great athletes, but we had great basketball players, great minds. And you were instrumental in his success totally.
You know, must be kind.
Pardon me?
I said, you must too kind.
No, not too.
Wow, man, that's an amazing story right there.
But I think that the things that you did for him, not just on the basketball court, but for you to be able to bring players in that you knew that you were, if not better than, and recruit them and bring them in as recruits, knowing that they're probably going to play ahead of you, you know, I don't know if I could have done that. I just don't know if I could have done that, you know, and that's what it shows you, just because of what you've done, even just for that part when you were a student, and now you carried on how you've helped so many students throughout, you know, Long Beach State and Compton, and, you know, you've helped so many people. That's one of the reasons I said, okay, I'll do this, because I have the utmost respect for you.
Oh, you must be kind, brother. You still there?
I'm here. Oh, yeah. I think we lost Regal. Oh, he's back.
Oh, yeah, he's there. Well, you know, Tark was very persuasive, and we did a lot of things. And it was a movement on campus also. And he wasn't, you know, he was very conservative.
Right.
And so I had to, he would all say, man, I don't know whose side you're on, sleep, you know. I said, man, you know, because they were drafting people and they had a big rally on campus. And I just told people, you know, just don't go. I ain't going, you know. And that just blew his mind, you know, that I broke up the rally, the demonstration, right, by saying that, because it was a setup. But that's a long story. But me and Tark, I love Tark. I had to get more out of Tark than he got out of me, because he double practiced you. He practiced us. All he did was eat a basketball. He ate basketball, and he loved the game. He loved the coach, and he'd practice us all day. And
right.
But he didn't know I was going to graduate on time with my class, so, you know, because no other player was doing that, because, you know, man, I saw the politics, like you just said, that we win the championship at junior college transfer our first year. And the next year, he wanted to change the whole team to superstars that he had recruited.
Right.
And and many of them had not played with each other, even though we were successful. You understand? And, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of contradictions. But anyway, I didn't care. You know, I started focusing on academics then to right. get out of college on time. But the thing is that when you and I think, did y'all play freshman ball then?
Yeah,
with we had played freshman. And Dwight Taylor was before you.
Right.
And I think Ed was before you.
Yeah, he's a year ahead of me.
Yeah, yeah. Ed had broke all them records scoring and stuff. So we had built a culture when you came of you know, leading up to where you was
definitely,
going
yeah.
at Cal yep. State. And as far as practice and as far as an attitude of expectation to win. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, because it was you weren't just the only good player on the team.
No,
there were exactly. always good players. But go ahead, Glenn.
No, but it was a situation that's just like, well, we had George Gervin.
Yeah. You know, yeah, you drove him to the airport.
No, I didn't.
You didn't.
I roll with it.
Oh, okay.
But that was the story, the situation. Where, I mean, we were bringing good people up in there, you know, just, you know, Larry Fogle from New York, George Gervin, you know, just Tommy Henderson. There was a bunch of different guys that were coming in there. Mm-hmm. And George, though, you know, of course, he's the main man. I become the Iceman. And he was there. They brought me in there with George. George came in there, and we were going to the gym to play. And I'm looking in the gym, I'm watching everybody balling out there, and George is coming down there finger rolling on people and dunking on people. And I said, so I asked Ivan Duncan, he was the assistant coach. I said, who's that dude right there? He says, George Gervin. I said, what year is he, a junior or a senior? He said, a freshman. I said, what? I said, you kidding me? You brought me in here with him? You know, I ain't afraid to be honest. You know, the boy could straight out go. I know he was better than I was. But we ended up being really, really close friends. He stayed there for like about two months, almost 2 or 3 months. And he just got homesick. Him and he had a friend of his that played football, and he was homesick. And so George decided he wanted to go home. He's like, so he had one of our players, because George Trapp and Tark had to go to a conference, to a meeting, you know, one of the media meetings. And Tark told this guy, Eric McWilliams, to watch out for George. Whatever he wants to do, do it. Mm-hmm. Well, George says he wants to go home. He needs to go to the airport because he's going to go home, but he'll be back, that kind of stuff. So he's like, Glenn, man, you going to ride with me? I said, no, man, I ain't riding with you. He said, no, come on, man, ride with me. I said, all right, I'll ride with you. So we get to the airport, and he gets out of the car, and he goes, all right, man, I'll see you later. Good luck, Glenn. I'm like, well, you talking about good luck? He says, man, I can't come back, man. I'm sick. I got to stay in Detroit. And that was the end of the story right there, you know. So everybody said, I took you to the airport. I didn't take you to the airport. But we laugh about it because I see him every year, you know, at different functions, you know, retired players functions and the All-Star games. And we laugh about it every year. You know, he's like, man, remember I told you I wasn't coming back. I said, boy, you just dogged me out. So. But anyway, that's a long story short. I had a good career at Long Beach as far as the playing, because coming from Jeff, I averaged around 29 points a game at Jefferson, you know, and then I got to Long Beach, and we had to play at the freshman team, and you know, we still averaged a lot of points there. And I got to varsity, and Tark wasn't even using me initially. He was like, you got to sit. We got Ed Scorm. We got this person. We got Chuck Terry. We got, you know, so I was getting like 2 or 3 minutes a game if I'd get in. You know, when I get in, it'd be like 2 or 3 minutes. It used to be near the end of the game. And so we finally played University of Pacific, and this little guard, John Earhart, lit us up for like 36, just lit us up, you know. And we had to come back and play them the very next weekend. And the guys on the team were like, because, you know, at Jeff, you had to play D. You had to D people up at Jeff. Right? Regardless if I scored a lot, you had to D up, or else you weren't going to be on the floor. And so the, a lot of the guys on the team are like telling Tark, Glenn can guard this kid. You know, so anyway, that's what happened. He put me in the starting lineup just, you know, for defensive purposes. You know, I held him to 6 points. He only got 6 points. And from that point on, I was in the lineup as a defensive person, you know. So that's where the playing time, you know, happened with that right there. You know, and so from that point on, you know, I was known throughout the nation as the defensive player, you know, Glenn McDonald defense. If we, whoever we go against, they always try to make that matchup. Glenn's going against this person, you know, that type of thing. And so it worked out. And then when Lute Olson came in after Tark left, then Lute was like, I remember you in high school. I want you to start looking to score. So then, you know, I went from 3 points a game to 15 points a game, but still playing defense. And rarely did I ever come out of games. And that's why the Celtics, like, what they saw in regards to leadership and those type of things, you know. And that's one of the reasons that they looked at me to bring me in and then kind of to take Don Chaney's place, because Don Chaney was, you know, the defensive specialist for them at that time. And, you know, it just worked out in that sense. You know, it just, I don't know. It's just ironic how everything falls in place for you.
When you was at Jeff, they played regimen. Is that right? Your team, a good 9 points, and then the next team come in, they had to hold their team to 6 points, or another team come in. Is that the way Hanson did?
Yeah, that's how Hanson did it. What we'd do, we'd have a scrimmage the day before the game, you know, and so then depending on how the score was, if it was like, say for instance, like 15-6 at the end of the game, then that's what would happen in a real game. You would go in, if a team scored 15 points against you, then you had to come out. If they scored, then that the other unit would go in. If they scored 6 points against them, that's the most they scored, then they'd have to come out. And there were times where the first unit would almost sit on the bench almost the whole first quarter, because, like, I remember one particular game where the defense had to, they couldn't allow 4 points. The first unit, we sat on that bench almost the whole first quarter because they were not going to let that other team score 4 points. Because as soon as they score 4 points, they're going to have to come out. And they're like, we ain't letting them come in. We're not going to let them come in, you know. So, but that it was an incentive to make people play hard, you know, especially on the defensive end.
And that's where they played back east. They went to 9 points in full court. And, you know, that's why
Okay, I never knew that.
We played mainly half court 3-on-3.
Right.
In L.A., in Hollywood, you know, they called us the Hollywood teams. But, you know, we didn't very seldom play full court when we was coming up at the parks, you know, mm-hmm. you know, who got the first, who got the second. But back east, they played full court, but they only went to 9, and then, you know, you had to play defense because, you know, 9 buckets, and that was it. You know,
quick, that can go real fast.
Yeah. And now, Glenn, when you was at Cal State, you know, with y'all won the championship the three years you played, right? Varsity.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So what was that like? You played with Poindexter DM?
Yeah, sure did. Yeah.
And Lou Olson said that the team that he had with you, Leonard Gray, and the Poindexters was, after he went to Arizona, he said the best team he ever had was that team, but they couldn't go because y'all was on probation. In those days, they didn't let you go to another school if you was on probation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Tell us how that experience went.
There was, it was interesting because we were ranked third in the nation and in the preseason. And right before the season got ready to start, you know, they come up with all this stuff about recruiting violations, you know, and everything else. And they actually, you know, like I said, they put us on probation. They just said we wouldn't be able to go to the tournament at the end of the year. And that was Lou's first and only year. And we were good. We were really good. And then we had the little, you know, little white kid, Rick Abereg. You know, he was our point guard, and he was in his own world. You know, he could straight out play, you know. But with myself and then Roscoe, Clifton, Leonard, you know, we had a team. And the thing about that group is that anybody could score. So everybody just really, really played together. There was nobody. When Ed was there, it was everybody was focused on getting the ball to Ed, you know. And, you know, I mean, he was extremely good, you know. So, but that was just the way Tark had it. That was the way it was. Because even when Lamont came to play at Long Beach, he was a JC All-American. And he came in, and the first three or four games, Lamont was leading the team in scoring. And then all of a sudden, Tark told Lamont that Ed's the one should be getting the ball. You know, he just kind of took Lamont's minutes from him, you know, and which was wrong because the boy was actually playing his butt off. It wasn't like we were losing. We were still kicking butt, you know. Mm-hmm. So it with this team that we played with, the ball was distributed throughout the team and everybody could just play. You never knew who was going to go off what night. And that's what Lute, you know, instilled in us. Just let's just play team basketball, move the ball. I'm not saying that Glenn should be the one shooting the ball. I'm not saying that Roscoe should shoot the ball. We're just going to play. We got to play as a unit and everybody's got to have faith in each other. And that's what really, you know, got it going with us. And we lost two games that year. We never lost. My whole career at Long Beach State, we never lost at home. And then, you know, on the road that senior year, we lost two games on the road. Each was by 1 point. We lost to Marquette at Marquette by one. Then we lost to Colorado, you know, by one. And I've always told Luke before he passed away, I always tell Luke, you know, you blew that game for us because you never took nobody out the game. We couldn't even breathe, you know. And so, it was, you know, we had a really good team. It was just something we focused on.
Now, when you was with Tark before he left to go to Vegas, you played two seasons with Tark. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Was it zone and man-to-man or just straight zone?
It was primarily zone. The only time we played that I can recall that we actually went to a man-to-man was the year we played Raymond. Mm-hmm. And I told Tark I wanted to guard Raymond because I heard so much about Raymond Lewis. Raymond Lewis, even though he was a Verbum Dave, he was in the CIF and I was at Jeff in the city, you know, that type of thing. I never ever saw him play. I never heard of him. I mean, I just heard his name all the time. And Tark was in love with Raymond Lewis. You know,
you tried to recruit him.
Yeah, we tried to get him in here and, you know, but I said, Tark, let me guard him, you know. He says, oh, Glenn. He says, okay, he's yours. And so, you know, at the Long Beach Arena, you know, I got a chance to guard him, but I still didn't guard him for very long because he did something. Now he did a step back or whatever and had me off balance. And I went to, you know, contest the shot and my whole arch fell. You know, my foot just.
Remember when you got hurt.
Yep. And so I was out. I didn't play the rest of that half. I didn't play the second half. He ended up scoring like – that was his first shot that he made because I blocked two of his shots. And then, you know, and then what happened was he when he made that move and he buried that shot because I remember I looked over my shoulder as I was trying to limp to get to it. And I looked over my shoulder and the ball went straight through. And then from that point on, he ended up with 26 the rest, you know, for the game. Then we played him again at their place, and it was the very next week. And you know, I ended up playing. We ended up playing a zone against him, and I think he got 52 or something like that. Yeah, but yeah, it was one of the best shows I ever seen as a player, as a spectator. Yeah. And you know, the last shot he made, he fell in the stands, and you know, it was unbelievable. Just. He was I compare him as far as talent wise to he was a Kyrie Irving back then already. Mm-hmm. He was that kind of player, you know, just could do anything with it.
Yeah. He was. I was a freshman coach that year. Tark had me and I don't know if you remember Happy, the heavy set guy.
Oh, Happy. Yeah.
He passed. And so I became, you know, we were co-head coach, but then he passed before the season started. and then I became the head coach by myself. Yeah,
that was pretty devastating with him passing away too.
Yeah, in a chair or something like that. But it was good. Now, Glenn, when you got drafted, you were 17th player.
Yes.
To be chosen in the first round.
Right.
And they said that you were happy to be drafted at the 17th, but you really wanted to go to the Bulls.
Yes.
Because you was from Illinois. That's what they said.
No, it's true. I mean, because I grew up in Illinois and I didn't like any LA teams. Just the fact that I, you know, came out here from Illinois. And then I hated Celtics because they always won. And I was always like an underdog kind of guy. So when I got drafted by the Celtics, Dwight Jones was the head coach at that, you know, he was assistant coach at that time. Mm-hmm. And he came in and told me that he called me up and said, Glenn, you just got drafted by the Boston Celtics, first round to the Boston Celtics. And I told him, I said, okay, thanks for letting me know, but I'm in the middle of moving right now, so I'll call you back. And he was so pissed off. He's like, did you hear what I just said? The Celtics. Celtics just drafted. You never won, you know, in their first round. I said, no, but I'm moving right now. I'm going to another apartment. I'm trying to get this stuff done. And so, you know, but that's how I was I really was not ecstatic about the Celtics drafting me. I was glad I got drafted, but I would have, you know, then plus I was getting ready to go from California to the East Coast. You know, it's just like, God dang, you know. But then once I got back there and went back there just to visit and talk, you know, with the contracts and all that kind of stuff and negotiations and walking through the guard, you know, I was like, man, you know, this is something else. Yeah, maybe I might get a chance to get a ring, you know. So you just kind of, you know, nothing's going to happen. You know it's going to happen where you're going to be there. So there's no need trying to pout about it. But you know, it turned out to be a good situation, but a bad situation in regards to, you know, the way that they released me, you know, with Tommy Heinsohn. And, you know, it was just kind of unexpected. But, I mean, guys got a plan. I always say that, you know, there's a plan. And, you know, my plan was maybe get my foot in the door, see what the NBA felt like, win a championship. And then now what are you going to do now? We're going to release you. So are you going to mope and not do anything, you know, or are you going to try to move on and find something else to do? So that's how I kind of looked at it as much as possible. But it was ironic because we had just won the championship. We came back to
Long Beach. You wouldn't have won if you hadn't scored the last 8 points.
No, I know. Yeah, but they don't care. You know, it's like, but you know, we won the championship. We come back to Long Beach. Renee and I get married that summer, you know, and I go back to Boston and get cut. I'm like, oh shit, you know, I gotta take care of this girl. I ain't got no job. You know, so I was like, this is crazy. So she just enrolled and she was going to Boston University at that time. So then I Don Nelson was assistant coaching over at Milwaukee Bucks. So one of their players got hurt. So he brought me in there, you know, like I was there for like about 2 months, you know, until Dave Myers, that was the kid from UCLA, he got hurt. So I got involved with that for, you know, a couple months. And then finally when he came back, I was released. And then I came back out to California and, you know, I started, I was delivering beer, working on beer trucks. You know, everybody like, man, you working on it? I said, you damn right. I got a wife to take care of, man. You know, I don't care. I'm working, you know, and because, I didn't get really any calls from other teams. And I think a lot of it was because, you know, I was playing so sparsely. At times I'd play a lot, then I'd get some kind of injury, you know, a sprained ankle, or I'd pull my shoulder out. And, you know, so it was just certain situations that didn't, you know, give other teams a chance to see me really play, you know, consistently where they could say, well, this guy might be able to help. And then plus a couple of the other teams that did look at me there, they end up having basically everybody on their team was like guaranteed contracts. So they weren't going to give, you know, they weren't going to give that up. So that's how that happened. And then all of a sudden I got a call from Ivan Duncan, who was my freshman coach, and he was coaching in Sweden. And he said, I know you're probably tired of hearing everybody asking you what happened, you know, you want to come over here. And so then I went to Sweden. I went over there. I asked Renee if she wanted to go on a second honeymoon. you know, and she's like, what are you talking about? So I'm like, I told her what was going on and had a chance to go to, you know, to Europe. And so we ended up going over there for a year, you know, to Sweden and playing for Duncan's team. So, and then, you know, after that was over, because we were the European champions. And so we played in Europa Cup. So you traveled all throughout Europe. And so
I listened to this.
That's your buddy Omar Montgomery.
What's up, Omar?
You're on mute, Kumba.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How McDonald, how's everything with you?
I'm doing great. Still in Colorado. Enjoying life, and just got back. Had a retreat in the mountains. So just got back.
Boy, you're the mountain man, huh?
No, trust me, I'd rather have been in the city. But that's where the retreat was. So how's the family?
Everybody's doing real well. Everybody's doing well. You know, my daughter, she's still living here in Long Beach. She's the assistant athletic director over at UC Irvine. And then my son, you know, he's back in Boston. He lives back there. He's got two kids back there, and he's doing real well. So everybody's doing well. And Renee's Renee. She's taking care of business as usual, taking care of me and everybody else. So,
Coach, we're going to open up the floor for people who have listened up to this time. You have any questions? Anybody that want to chime in and ask Glenn any questions? Rasha Key?
Yeah, I just wanted to continue what I was saying. Matter of fact, let me show this. I'm going to show what inspired what Coach McDonald was an excellent coach. He was basically like a caregiver to a lot of the players that came into Long Beach State when I came in back in 86, and he was our assistant coach. And, you know, he just cool, calm, and collected, and he took care of a lot of us. So when I had started doing this, I said, I got to get Coach McDonald on here. And what had happened was I started thinking about what more I could do with the website. And what happened was I thought about Coach, and I said, you know what? He's a legendary guy. So I said, I need to put in a legend section, and he's going to be the first person I put in. And then I asked him, and he said, you know, he would do it. But we kind of we didn't get a chance to really put it together. So I just did the legends page, and I just want to show everybody on the website. We have a legends page, and I'm going to get Coach McDonald on there. And I have, you know, different personalities on there, and it's based on people that really good people, and of course Professor Amon-Ra's on there, my parents on there. We have Omar here, we got DeAnthony, we got Ernest Hall, we got Brother Hembrick. All of them are worthy of being on there. So we're gonna keep adding people on there, and we got to get Coach McDonald on there. So I just wanted to say that he was the inspiration behind the legends page on the website. So
I appreciate that.
I'll let other people talk and ask him questions.
Brother Ernest Hall, you have any questions for Coach McDonald? Can you hear me? What about you, DeAnthony? Are you there?
Thank you. Somebody, it looks like it's mute. I don't know.
Yeah, if he's mute. We'll go with Hembrick. Joe, you just came in. This is my co-host, Glenn. He coached at Linwood, and coach was the first head black coach in at Linwood High School.
Okay.
Yeah, and administrator for the Compton Unified School District. Go ahead, Joe. You have any questions?
I just tuned in. No, I don't have any questions. I just remember the brother's name from back in the day.
Okay.
I remember that name, although I didn't know him. Okay. That's in Long Beach that he played at Long Beach State, right?
Yeah.
Boston Celtics and
I know he was a pro and all that. I had a guy I used to coach with named Ron Pritchard that was at Long Beach State. That was during the time where I think you might have been
going there. He's coached football, right?
No, he coached football. He was Pritchard was what's that game, that big high school game they played back at the, not the Shrine game, but game they used to play at the Coliseum, all the high school stars. I think he was the running back there and for that in 1963. And then he went into service. He was at Long Beach State when the big running back guy was there. What was his name?
Leon Burns.
Yeah. He was doing that time. But he was playing tight end during those days. Yeah. He went in the circus and got out and then went to Long Beach State. Yeah, but I don't have any questions. Like I said, I used to remember hearing the brother's name, although I never met you or anything, but I do remember the name well.
All right, Kumba, what about you?
No questions, but just want to tell Glenn just what an inspiration he was when I was on campus. I'm probably the group that came in after Rico. And right. I didn't play basketball, but to a lot of the Black, especially a lot of the Black students, you know, anytime we walked in the gym or walked in the gym area, just your presence, your family presence, just the way you carried yourself. You mentored so many people and just always gave us a collective calm way to be able to address issues. So I just want to say personally to me, thank you for all you taught me and always being hospitable when I showed up to a game and just, you know, your whole family, you know, I always sat with y'all when I went to a game.
Yeah, so yeah.
To say thank you for everything.
No problem, man.
But Glenn, you know, you're really being nice about the Boston Celtics because, you know, that was a period where racism and discrimination and, you know, in the 70s, early 70s, there was a lot of white ball players and a lot of, you know, you don't see it like you see it today, you know, almost all teams having Black players. And even when we was playing for Tark, you know, Georgetown, Temple and all of them and SC them, they didn't have predominantly Black teams. And so when the Celtics cut you for no reason, most people felt they were just making room for a Caucasian to play at that time. I don't know how accurate that is.
No, it's not accurate. And in regards to that, they felt that what they did with that release, they brought Curtis Rowe and Sidney Wicks in. Mm-hmm. Those are the players that they brought in when they released me, you know. And and they told me that, you know, right when they were released, first of all, as time went by later, one of the assistant coaches, a few years later, he had talked to me. And he just told me, he said, for some reason, he said he doesn't understand, but for some reason, Tommy Heinsohn really didn't like you. So, I mean, I said, what the hell are you talking about? He says, no, he said, I know for a fact that he didn't really like you. And he felt that, you know, bringing Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe, bringing them in because they're from a, you know, championship breed with John Wooden, that they would help bring this program, you know, to this time. So we just won the championship. So what the hell are you talking about? You know, and so, you know, he says, I can't tell you, but I know that Tommy Heinsohn did not like you, you know. And so I don't think in regards to the racist thing, I don't think that wasn't the reason that he released me, you know, to bring in a couple white boys or anything like that. Because honestly, you know, he brought Wicks and Rowland in. I told him when he said he was bringing them in, I told him right then, I said, you know something? They're not Celtics. I said, let me tell you right now, they're going to play for themselves. They're not going to play for the team. And that's why, like Dave Collins, you know, Dave Collins didn't even play half of that year because he didn't want to play with them, you know, because of how they approached the game and how they approached the supposed teamwork. he drove a taxi around, you know, that year, almost half a year. You know, just he didn't play. So I know for a fact that with my situation, it wasn't so much with the racial situation, honestly. But I mean, it was definitely that way back in Boston. I mean, you can't say that wasn't happening. You know, there's no way.
Well, what about when you went to the Philippines? How was that?
That was, first of all, I didn't really want to go initially because I just, when I kept talking, a guy kept calling me saying that a friend of mine that said he played in the Philippines. And he said, that's a place you should go. You'd have a great opportunity there. And the first thing I was thinking was, I'm not going to go over there and play against midgets. You know, I mean, I just finished playing in the NBA. I just finished playing in Europe. Why am I going to go play with midgets, you know, in the Philippines? Mm-hmm. So they kept persistently, constantly calling me. And so finally, so let me just go over there and see what this basketball is about. Because the guy kept saying, it's not what you think, Glenn. It's not what you think. And so I finally get there and, you know, there's Filipinos staring me eye to eye, you know, and a couple of them I was looking up to, you know. The style of play was running gun. So it was a situation, I'm watching these Filipinos coming down, dunking on other Americans. And just, you know, it was amazing just what I was seeing and what I was watching over there. And I finally just said, you know something, I think this would be fun. And it's a whole different style of play. And I decided to go over there. And, you know, I signed a contract with them and ended up staying over there for 6 years. You know, I was the first NBA player to ever go over there, you know, and play, former NBA player. And then, we won the championship my first year, we did never won a championship. And then the second year, we won another championship. And then my third year, we ended up in the finals, but, you know, we didn't win it. But I was a player coach at that time, because after our second championship, our coach decided to retire. And they made me the player coach. So I played and coached. Mm. And then after that, I told them I didn't want to play anymore. I wanted to just coach because I wanted to get ready. When I get back to the States, I want to coach when I get back to the States. So I wanted to get that experience of being just a coach. And so that's when I got back there. And that's when D'Anthony came in his freshman year and Billy Walker and then Regals. So it was everybody. So that's when I got a chance to get involved with the coaching in the state on the state side. But the cultural aspect of it was unbelievable. It was just great. You know, just the people there were friendly. They really catered to the Americans. It was, you know, when you never know what's going on in other countries. And then if you don't study those type of things, I mean, I'm looking at grass huts, you know, that type of stuff, you know. And so I was like really skeptical about, you know, the living situations. And then I get over there and you think you're in Beverly Hills someplace, you know, the homes that they had over there, we had, you know, a car with a driver. We had, you know, they call them yayas, but you know, for the kids, they have maids, we have a cook, you know, they just really, really took care of you as if, you know, you're walking down the street and as a player, it was like you were Magic Johnson or something. You know, you walk down the street and everybody's looking at you. You know, you walk down the street, they walk past you and they try to bump you just to touch you, you know, because they loved it so much and they loved the sport. And then I was a good player over there, you know. So I had a great time. It's just when I got back here, the reason we came back to the States is because we wanted Michael to start school here in the States, you know. But if we had known how good the international schools were, we probably would have been there a couple more years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the issues are challenging because when you start coaching the Sparks, how did that come about? And then you were assistant coach at Cal State Long Beach for the girl?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How'd you get involved in that?
Well, because I was involved with Regal and them as an assistant coach, like I was a part-time assistant with the men. Mm-hmm. And from there, after 2 years, you know, that was the only thing I was doing. So the money I was making when I was from playing overseas, It's mm-hmm. constantly dwindling because I'm, you know, that's my job. I came back, I got in school because I hadn't graduated. I needed another year to graduate. Well, I went to the Celtics. I still had school left. And then so I came back after 10 years of being, you know, with the Celtics and overseas. And I came back and said, okay, I got to get back in school if I'm going to decide to coach, get involved in coaching. Mm-hmm. And so so I was a part-time assistant making $500 a month, you know, at that time. And after 2 years, I'm like, you know something, I can't keep doing this. All this money is just, you know, the money I'm making, you know, the money I made overseas is dwindling, you know. Mm-hmm. And so one of the young ladies that was with LaTanya Pollard, who was with the women's program, she was quitting because she was getting ready to take another job overseas herself. And the head coach for the women, Joan Bombassini, she saw how I was with her players. You know, I was always talking to her players and coaching her players on the side and, you know, doing a little different, you know, just different individual works with them. And she asked me if I wanted to be involved with her girls. And I said, hey, this is a full-time position, definitely. You know, and it's still basketball. It doesn't matter if it's mm-hmm. women or what. It's still basketball. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got involved with her on the women's side. And then we went to the Final Four back-to-back, you know, those 2 years. And then she ended up leaving and went down to Arizona. And then I applied for her job, and I took her job, you know, in regards to being the head coach. Mm-hmm. So after that was a touchy situation because the way they wanted a woman coach, you know, mm-hmm. and I told them, I said, I don't care if you want a woman coach or not, you know, but make sure she's qualified. You don't just say, we have to hire a woman because, you know, now I can go in and sue. I can do whatever I want in regards mm-hmm. to that matter. But, you know, they ended up hiring me and I missed out on a lot of recruiting, you know, because of the timeline that they did. So the first year we ended up going to the NCAA tournament. We made it to the second round, getting that beat. Then a lot of my players, Tracy Jackson, and a lot of people graduated. And so then I was left with some players that weren't that good. And then plus I had to get walk-on players that really weren't that good. So we ended up winning 7 games after the second. First year we won 22 games. The second game year we won 7. Then with the third year, we won 11. And then the fourth year, we won 14. And the fifth year, they released me. Mm-hmm. They said that they're looking for – they wanted to go in a different direction. And I'm like, you want to go in a different direction. And each year, you've seen that how I've improved. You understood what the situation was when I first got the job. But that's the situation. So my fifth year, they released me. And but they put me in as the director of the intramural sports for that last year. So they paid me for my fifth year, but I had to still be there and work. So I became the director of intramurals. And that's when I ended up retiring. I ended up being, they said, if you do a pretty good job, maybe you'll be here forever, da 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 da, you know. And mm-hmm. I ended up being there 22 years as the director of intramurals. But during that time with the intramurals is when I met with Penny Toler, who was the GM for the Sparks. And she played for me at Long Beach State. She was on the women's team when we went to the Final Four. And so she had talked to Michael Cooper and told him that I was available, you know, if he wanted to interview me about being involved with them. And so we clicked up, hit it off perfect, you know, right from the beginning. You know, about his philosophies and my philosophies. And then both of us were all about the defense and stuff. And so it ended up being, we got there together and we ended up winning back-to-back championships, you know? So then I was just kind of tired of basketball. I just, you know, about the coaching. And so I take a leave of absence from intramurals during the summer so I could be with the WNBA. And then I just kind of like, you know, something that I'm not putting my whole effort, you know, into the recruiting, you know, going out, watching, scouting players. Mm-hmm. And I just felt comfortable just taking charge of the intramural program.
Yeah, and you can be home more.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, but the beautiful thing is Coop and Penny showed up for your retirement of your jersey, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they did. Both. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And a lot of other important people showed up. But that was a very, I attended that too. That was just a great affair, your attendance there. Now, if you had some messages for young people who in today's sports of basketball has changed. We didn't have a shot clock. We didn't, my year, they wouldn't even let us dunk. But and then we didn't have the three-pointer. You understand? So how would you coach or discuss with young players who want to play the game today, if you had a message for them, if they came to you for advice, what would you tell them?
You know, honestly, Rob, I just tell people, because you get some kids that come up to me and they want to know, what do you think? You know, that somebody, especially when somebody comes and says, somebody tells them that they can't play, you're not very good. Why don't you just settle for, playing JV? And I just let them know. I said, don't ever let anybody tell you what you can or cannot do. The biggest thing is you giving every bit of the effort that you have, because you don't want to ever look back and say, I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. Everybody's not going to make it. That's one thing I do tell them. I said, but if you're really serious about it and you have a passion for it, then you have to go after it, and you can't let other people determine, what's going to happen with your future. Mm. You have to be the one to force yourself, because you're going to get tired some days that you don't want to work out. You don't want to practice, but in order to be as good as you think that you are, or think that you want to be, you have to sacrifice going out, doing little things, but you have to never let anybody tell you that you can't do something.
You got to put work in.
And that's what I always tell them, somebody else outworking you. They'll outwork you, and just that one day, they could take your spot. If you just decide you don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But that's what I get a lot of kids that, that ask me that question. What would you do? I just let them know I'm gonna bust my butt. Because, mm-hmm. Sometimes you're not gonna be as talented as somebody else, but you can't say that you didn't give it your best effort.
Mm-hmm. And also, that was they came to your retirement, and mm-hmm. then Kevin Coulter came to your retirement of your jersey, the referee for the NBA. You have developed some strong relationships with many of the athletes that went through Cal State Long Beach and things of this nature. How do you cultivate those type things? As far as developing strong relationships, Kevin Coulter, he's an NBA player, Coop show up to the retirement, Penny shows up, it was just a great affair, affair.
But I think, Ron, mm-hmm. you gotta be humble. That's one thing, first of all. Uh-huh. And I really just have a care for people.
Yeah.
And I don't care, I can have 20 championships or, 20 championships or whatever it is, it's nice, but yeah. I like to just be myself with people and just talk to people and be honest with people. And if there's something I can do to help them, I'm not going to talk to them. Like Rigo and everybody else knows that, if they ask me a question, I'm not going to lie to them. I'm not going to talk to them and say what they want to hear. If this is what I feel, I'm going to say, this is how I feel about it. Now you think about it, but that's just, I don't know. It's always just been how I've always been. And I think that, just being around so many people constantly, you don't want people to take advantage of other people. And everybody, nobody's on the same page, most of the time. And so then I just say what's on my mind. This is what I feel. And I try to be as honest as I can.
Mm-hmm. And the most important thing is your wife played a good role with the athletes. So many as a counselor, helping them choose their classes and helping them get through school and being there in consultation also. And she played a great role with you also and at Cal State Long Beach as a counselor and a supporter of athletes, particularly both men and women. And that also contributed, as well as your son going to Stanford, your daughter going and being the athletic director at UC Irvine and assistant athletic director. Mm-hmm. And your son, I think he played ball for Stanford. And you know, I mean, you know, those are success stories, a family success story and a family working together.
Right, exactly. And it's all about working. It's really about working together, you know, and especially, I mean, Renee and I have been married for 45 years, you know, and it's like every day something new still, you know, it's just something new. But then she's always been involved with the students. I always say today, if I was a coach right now, she'd be my assistant coach.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, being honest, you know, because you know how they have people that take care of this and they keep take care of that. Well, she does all that already, you know. So, you know, it's just a situation that she's passionate towards our relationship, but then she's passionate about seeing these younger people develop and, you know, make a career out of whatever they're trying to do and understand that they can push themselves to be better all the time. And
right there is an example of strong Black male-female relationships and a strong Black family with two parents and how that works out in the modern day. In the old days, they had parents and men, and that's what led to many of us growing up further because the mothers and the fathers were together.
Right.
And to be married 45 years and still be in love and still be together and to have the successful children and grandchildren and things is a beautiful thing and example also for the athletes to see that, to see the harmony and the integrity in a male-female relationship. In other words, they see you out drinking and see you out chasing women on the team and all that stuff. They knew you was at peace with your wife. She was at peace with you, and y'all worked for their interest. And that was a beautiful thing. You know, I had my grandkids try to get mentored by y'all, you know. They were space cadets, you know, but still, they're doing okay right now, you know. But school's just wasn't in their taste, you know. But still, I just want to say how much I appreciate our friendship. We put on the reunion with me, you, Tap, and Sam, and all that. See, and we brought all the players back together for a reunion. We're going to try to do it again after COVID goes down.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, and we have football players, basketball players, referees, former coaches. All of them turned out to that affair, and it was just a great thing.
That's how it should be, though, you know, because we're still all family. You know, we're all family. You know,
and that's one criticism I have at Cal State. They don't deal with their basketball alumni, in my opinion, as far as building a strong booster, a support of the former players. You know what I mean?
I've talked to Andy Fee, and he understands. He's trying to work on getting that a lot better, honestly, because even he knows he's made mistakes in regard. Like, you know, he's only been there 4 years now, 5 years, and he's got a lot of people that are holdovers that he's trying to get rid of. You know, the big thing I've told him too is the fact that there's never ever been a person of color in administration in athletics. Now we've had Black coaches, but never a Black administrator, never somebody that runs the fundraising, Black athletic director, nothing ever. It's never been done. And I told him that, you know, we've talked about that, you know, that this doesn't make any sense that we haven't been able to get a Black person in administrative atmosphere, I mean, position on that campus. Now, hopefully, if things go properly the way it should be, then my daughter might be that first one. because she's going after this job that they're getting ready to open up. And they, you know, it's pretty much an athletic director at Long Beach. The person that was there before, she was a senior administrator, and for the women's senior administrator, and she retired, you know, recently. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that Alexis is at UC Irvine, and they're always talking, we got to get your daughter over here. We got to get your daughter. Well, okay, now here's your chance. I told them, this is your chance. You mm-hmm. keep saying you want her here, and she wants to be here. So, okay, let's see what she's going to do. So it should be opening up in the next week or two. And okay. then she's going to apply for that job. And, you know, so we'll see what happens from there. Because mm-hmm. she just got a position. She just got, for some reason, she just got a call from Boston College. Boston University just contacted her 2 days ago, which is just out of the clear blue about a position there as far as an athletic directorship there. You know, and she's like, well, you know, Dad, you and Mommy don't want both of us back in Boston. I said, no, we don't. But that day, I'll tell you what, if it's a good-ass job, you take your ass out there. You know? So we'll see. But, you know, they haven't done enough, like you said, not just for the Black, you know, hiring, but with our basketball program, for sure, they don't do enough, you know, in regards to keeping – every other year, they seem like, hey, Glenn, you have so-and-so's number? No, you guys should have those numbers. Why do I have to keep them every year? You guys should have it. You know, contact them, let them know what's going on, send out little flyers saying, hey, this is what's happening. Get the emails, let people know, invite them to games. I mean, come on, it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's volleyball seemed to have taken over the pyramid to a certain degree. But my point was is that basketball is one of their glamour sports, one of their major sports. They don't have a football team.
No.
And it seemed like they should put more resources into having more activities for former players, because that helps your recruitment. That helps them. You know, you have kids. You know, other kids, a lot of the former players are assistant coaches,
right?
Like Earl and all that. And these Long Beach Poly students are going to SC and going to UCLA versus Cal State Long Beach, and
right down the street.
Yeah, and that's it. But Arashiki, you just put a picture up. Tell us who all that was, and then we can go ahead and if nobody have any more questions, let Glenn get some rest. You ain't Rashiki. Tell us that picture. Y'all was at a pub or something.
Let me see. Yeah,
Judy Anthony. Oh,
I think was that at Legends?
Yeah, that was at Legends. Yeah, let me pull it up so everybody can see it better than that. Let me stop it there. And I'll tell you who everybody is. There goes D'Anthony. D'Anthony, you have a question or comment for Coach?
Yeah, I'm sorry, that was my work and it hit me on the other line. But, you know, I wanted to talk about what a surreal feeling it was, him coming from South Central LA, going to Long Beach State, playing with Tark, then Lute Olson, going to the NBA, but coming back and coaching us that first year. How did that feel?
That was awesome. That was awesome. We had ballers who didn't know they were ballers. Just put it that way. You know how you're not sure. You know, you're not sure what you have. D'Anthony was long, thin, lanky, but he knew how to play. But then at the same time, Coach Palmer wasn't sure how to use them. So it was just, you know, and then you have Billy Walker, who was one of the better assist players, you know, that can get the ball to anybody. Yeah, I don't know. It was a surreal feeling that to come back and be able to get involved. Because I had no clue that I was going to be involved with Long Beach State basketball, you know, and then to be able to do that. And even though I wasn't a full-time assistant, I felt like I was. you know.
You weren't?
And the players really respected me, and so that helped a great deal. But it was just surreal just to be involved with it. You know, everybody wants to come back to their alma mater and be able to be a part of it. And Dee and I have talked about it before because he should have been on the staff right now. He should be on the staff. But things sometimes don't work out. And, you know, you just move on and deal with it, and then you go from there. But I was fortunate.
Okay, you wanted me to tell you who everybody was right here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. This was at Legends, a big-time, you know, bar in Long Beach on what's the street it's on? Second Street?
Second
Street in Long Beach. Okay. So you got right here to the left, you got Reggie Wallace, a transfer from Oregon. I think he came in 85. He went to the University of Oregon.
Yeah, he came 85.
84.
84? No,
okay.
You were there
at 84. Reg was
redshirting there. Well, yeah, okay. All right.
Okay, then you got Billy Walker, the point guard. He held the assist record for years. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Then we got D'Anthony Langston, which is the legend right there, our center. Then you got the great coach McDonald. Then you have myself right here. I was a transfer from Washington State, and I came in '86. That was my first year there. I did 2 years. So we were responsible for the program getting turned back around, bringing back the glory days, our senior year. So that's a little credit for us. Yeah, that's
on the picture. Yeah. All right. Now, Rigo, did you play for Coach Ravling as well?
No, I was recruited by Coach Ravling, and he went to Iowa. And then when I had committed to Washington State while he was the coach, and he left, and then I didn't have a scholarship because he wasn't able to pull me over at Iowa, he said. So I was left in the cold, but the other coach Stevens, saw me play, and he said, okay, yeah, we want him. So I went there for a couple of years, but it didn't work out. And that's when I joined you guys, and we had a great time. Real good time.
Good times, good times.
Yeah.
I like about that group is that you guys still stay together. You guys keep even contact with each other. It's a true family. You know, you guys really keep in contact with each other. You, Reg, Billy, you know, you guys, I really.
Marlon, Jeff Easton.
Everybody, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, we keep Daryl Faulkner, you know.
Oh, Daryl, yeah. But, I talk to him every now and then, too.
Oh, yep. Man, I hear D Falk up early in the morning, every morning.
Yeah, he tells me, yeah, you early in the morning.
Falky, what you doing, Falky? Oh, this is my teammate right now. He called me Falky, you know? No, but what was great, though, now you see the difference of athletics, well, from today to yesterday. I mean, we had Suzanne Warzer. That was over the whole academic, athletics.
No, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And, but at least we had Coach McDonald and Renee to give us some foundation. You know, we knew how to read and write. You know, so we were able to go over there and have a sense of being home and having parents with us. So, I mean, that went on for decades and decades, not just stuff right there.
Yeah,
every student, you know, fencing, whatever, volleyball, whatever. Yeah, you know the McDonald's? Of course we know the McDonald's, you know. But, yeah, that's a testament, Coach, to you and your wife. We really needed it back then. And, you know, you just, you know, as a young kid, you don't know what's really going on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But to be able to have a place with two strong Black, you know, adults in a house that really cared about us, that you guys weren't playing. I mean, none of us became academically ineligible. You know what I'm saying?
No.
That didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Renee sat down with us and what we needed, this and that, okay, and we was on it. And it's so funny that, you know, the guys that came in together, Enrico, like 1 year later, Moreland, Billy, Jeff Easton, Reggie, you know, I mean, you know, we talk all the time. Me, Moreland, and Billy and Rigo every week. We used to come over to Coach McDonald's house and watch New Edition, bruh. Oh, but he had cable TV over there. We were like going nuts over there, man.
Yeah, and you Michael wouldn't, Jackson. And you wouldn't go home until Michael Jackson.
I had to see Billie Jean beat it or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not, I'm not going to that dorm without that right there.
We were like, we're going to bed, B, when Michael Jackson finishes and you just lock the door.
Hey, Glenn, I got a message from a, one of your former ball players. He went to Poly too, but he played, I think he may have played for Boston, Matt Calvin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Matt Calvin wanted to say hello. I mean, he's going to speak at my son's school principal, where he's a principal, in the next week or two. And I'm going to go and hear him. But I'm going to let him know you returned the warning.
Yeah, right. For sure.
All right, Rasha Key, won't you go ahead and talk about what's going to happen this Wednesday? And unless there's some other burning questions anybody have, Ernest Hall, anybody.
Well, we
I got one more for Coach. This is gonna blow. Well, I was gonna say sleepy, brother Rob. Listen, the stories. Listen, did you know this right here, Rigo Moore? This is for you, host. That Long Beach State could have and had 2/3 of this. Raymond Lewis, Ed Ratliff, and George Gervin at the school. Did you know that?
I just found out tonight. I didn't know about, I know they recruited Raymond Lewis, but yeah, I just found that out tonight.
And Lewis Brown.
Imagine that three, and Lewis Brown, if you had, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's a national championship if those guys are playing.
Well, they worked that summer in the summer. NC2A youth program, summer program. Lewis Brown and Raymond Lewis.
Right.
And then Cal State LA came in, start buying cars and stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
That was it, bro. UCLA, Kyrie or Lou Sin at that time had a special made Mercedes because he was so tall. You know,
I mean? Tell you what though, I don't know what would have happened with that group because I think Raymond and Ed might have had a conflict. Because Raymond didn't like give up that ball.
Yeah.
Well, Iceman too.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
where did Lewis Brown go to?
Lewis, he was in Vegas with Tart.
Vegas, yeah. He went to Vegas. That's right.
Yeah, he ended up going up there. But maybe I might not have been there all that. But I still played defense, so it would have kept me.
Raymond and Lewis made their transition.
Yeah.
So it's a sad situation. But go ahead, Rasha Key. Let's close this on out, brother. Ernest, you took your mute off. You have a question or comment? I guess he don't. Go ahead. Rasha.
Let me share the screen. So, on the homepage, here's Coach McDonald. And then you have us on Wednesday, the CEN show. I got my nephew coming on. He's an aspiring musical artist. So he's a youngster, 18-year-old. I'm going to interview him, and I'm going to have some interesting questions for him. And for everybody that's here, we're always here on Mondays and Wednesdays, majority of the time. And you can join anytime. Just come on. So that's who we have. Okay. Professor Rye, who we got next week?
I think we're going to have brother Ronnie Foster. He just did a book signing up at Fox Hill Mall. And he went to Ghana and stayed there. And he got a lot of good information about Ghana. He stayed there about 2 months. And he brought back a lot of information. Dr. B. Sinsalo, who've been to Uganda, where he said that they locked down their city, their area for 2 years for COVID, and that they had the less COVID outbreaks without Western medicine. They, you know, they didn't get no vaccine, hardly no vaccines and nothing, but they really, they got rid of COVID by locking everybody in. And that's going to be interesting. He's going to tell you all about Uganda, or either Ronnie is going to talk about Ghana. But at the same time, I want to thank D'Anthony for when he came on and all the good information he provided. And again, Glenn, you know, the grains of sand are few on the ocean floor in comparison to the many thanks we give to you for taking your time out. We would like to get Coulter on. We would like to get Penny on. We would like any other people that you would like to tell them that they could come on. We appreciate it. We just try to build our situation up, and those that have even critical issues that they want to talk about. We talk about sports. We talk about, you know, general, any issues. Like Rashkita said, his nephew's coming in, going to talk about music. We had my son on, talking about what's going on in Cherry Creek, where he's director of diversity at that Unified School District, just left University of Denver, the director of Black students, and now he's a director of, he was a director of Black Student Services. Now he's a director of diversity, and president of the NAACP in Aurora, and his fiance is running for commissioner out there, a county commissioner. So he's very active there. Then my other son was on, who Mac. He's going to speak at his school talking about crypto money, which, you know, that throws me off. You know, I like the old y'all can have all that crypto money.
He ain't lying, boy.
You know, I'm old school, but I respect everybody when they go that way, investments and things as next. But go ahead, Rasha, keep closing on out.
So, Coach McDonald, I appreciate you. Much love.
Appreciate you.
And then we definitely want to get Renee on here. We got to get Renee.
I'm gonna tell her. She. You told her already, so now at least she knows.
Yeah. So I'm gonna be bugging y'all. But yeah. So we got a Conscious Corner this show, and we got the CN show on Wednesday, and we want to say each one teach one, and everybody have a good evening.
All right. All right. Man.